From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA Senior Middle East Analyst, Mohammed El-Shenawy. Our topic on this edition of the program, Crisis in Israel. Our guest, Nimrod Goren. He's Senior Fellow for Israeli Affairs at the Middle East Institute, and that's a think tank based in Washington. Goren, who is based in Jerusalem, is the president and founder of Mitvim, the Israeli Institute for Regional Foreign Policies, and co-founder of Diplomeds, the Council for Mediterranean Diplomacy. Goren holds a PhD in Middle Eastern Studies from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and was a Hubert Humphrey Fellow at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University in upstate New York. Goren, who has many other distinguished credentials, specializes in Israel's foreign policy, regional relations, and the now moribund Middle East peace process. However, on this edition of the program, we will focus on Israel's domestic politics, namely the wave of protests across Israel and among the Israeli diaspora sparked by the right-wing coalition government's proposed judicial overhaul, which would gut the rule of law and weaken Israeli democracy. According to The Economist magazine, some 60% of Israelis oppose the legal reforms, which would allow the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, to appoint judges and override the Supreme Court, thereby handing unchecked power to a slim majority in the legislature. The Netanyahu-led government, Israel's most right-wing and religious in its history, is pushing these judicial reforms that critics say will undermine the country's delicate system of checks and balances. On this edition of the program, we will talk with Goren about the status of the proposed overhaul of Israel's judicial system, which, along with the government's intentions to expand Jewish settlements in the West Bank, has increased tensions with the United States, which guarantees Israel's security and supplies 80% of its imported arms. Moreover, the IDF, Israel Defense Forces, conducted strikes against southern Lebanon in response to a cross-border rocket barrage in the midst of a worsening series of escalations in the region. This, according to Newsweek magazine, Reuters reports that after the cross-border strikes in Gaza and Lebanon earlier this month, an Italian tourist was killed and five people were wounded in a car ramming in Tel Aviv that came hours after two Israeli sisters were killed in a shooting attack in the occupied West Bank. All of this adds to heightened Israeli-Palestinian tensions, which followed Israeli police raids in Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque last week. All of this, of course, occurring during this delicate time of the holy month of Ramadan, the Jewish Passover as well. Nimrod Goren joins us via Zoom from Jerusalem to discuss it all. Nimrod, shalom. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And of course, I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, Mohammed El-Shenawy. He's our in-house Middle East expert. So Nimrod Goren, let's start with this major standoff over the judicial overhaul. There was a bit of a hiatus. The wave of protests literally led the Bibi Netanyahu government to put a stop or a temporary hold on the judicial overhaul. Could you explain to us in layman terms what the government would like to do with the judiciary and why it is perceived by so many Israelis and others, including the U.S. government, as a blow to democracy?
We're in a very important moment in Israel's political history. What we're seeing, and as you mentioned, first is the most right-wing government we ever had. And that government that wasn't supported by almost 50% of the Israeli public in the November 1st elections, immediately, even before it took office, sparked so much opposition and pushback among those Israelis who are committed to liberal and democratic values. So even before the judicial overhaul plan was even introduced, there were already people in the streets and people publishing open letters and going against all these statements and declarations and intentions by really the most extreme politicians we have. Some of them seemed illegitimate only a couple of years ago and all of a sudden are acting in so important positions. So that was the context in the first or second month after the elections, and when Minister of Justice Yariv Levin went on prime time and introduced the first phase, only the first phase of his judicial overhaul plan that basically gives the government, the coalition, the ability to appoint judges and to control the legal system and therefore shatter a basic democracy, that raised such an outrage by so many Israelis that began pouring to the streets and doing whatever they can to try and push back against that. And that happened week after week, day after day, for several months. And eventually the Knesset went on recess a couple of weeks ago without this legislation being passed. It reached almost the final threshold of the legislation process, but didn't quite cross it yet. And with that context, people went for a break. We have a month of holidays. There is a dialogue happening in the president's house. President Herzog invited the sides to engage. And I'm not sure how much this will yield actual results, but at least it puts things on hold and reflects the power of the protest movement to really stop government intentions, even if for a limited time.
Well, thank you for that, Nimrod Goren, for giving us this very important context. In addition to these so-called reforms, many call it just an overhaul, which is very undemocratic, but nonetheless, how much do these so-called reforms have to do with Bibi Netanyahu being under indictment and wanting to avoid accountability from the judiciary?
You have different motivations at play, different major actors who are leading this process. Of course, Netanyahu is the prime minister, and Netanyahu's political calculations after the last elections are different than how he acted in his previous term, because we have a history of Netanyahu as Israel's prime minister for quite a number of years. Netanyahu usually aspired for coalitions that include a more moderate party, reflecting some positive image, at least towards the international community, something that is responsible. But this time, the reality is different. Netanyahu is facing trial. He's looking for every possible way to get out of this legal situation. For that, he's advancing changes to the judicial system that he opposed bluntly in the past. And for that sake, he brought into his coalition really the most radical elements, because those were the only ones who were willing to play along with his intentions. So his personal motivation here overrides perhaps the national security or national interest in shaping his coalition and advancing the policy. And when he's open to such reforms or overhaul, he brings on board the Minister of Justice, who has this ideological slant on this reform for many years. That's his political raison d'etre. That's his vision for politics. That's what he wants to do. And now he got a green light from Netanyahu. They are moving ahead with the support of the ultra-Orthodox parties that have their own reservations against the Supreme Court. So there is a convergence of different interests at play, with eventually Netanyahu's personal motivations leading the game.
That's absolutely fascinating. I need to make one more follow-up before I turn to my colleague, Mohammed. And that has to do with the protests and how these protests have mobilized so many different people. We're even talking about members of the security establishment, some soldiers who are opposed. As you said, this is posing a national security risk. We also noted that the defense minister was fired by Benjamin Netanyahu, and this caused another firestorm. Of course, I believe he may have been reinstated, but this shows you the amount of the widespread opposition. Nonetheless, Nimrod Goren, these proposed changes have exposed fissures between the secular Israelis and the growing hardline religious extremists, which have heretofore been overshadowed by, you know, external threats. Talk about the fissures in the society that this has laid bare.
Again, it's a very unique development. We don't have a history of such massive social protests that are not ideological in nature, in terms of the typical left versus right wing divide that Israeli politics saw for decades. When you go into the weekly protest in Jerusalem on Saturday nights, you will see so many people from religious background protesting against the right wing government together with their left wing colleagues. These are things that we didn't see in the past. So this protest movement is for something that is much deeper, much more basic in our identity. It's about democracy. It's about values. It's not about our typical divide on how to treat the Palestinian issue or how to deal with other political issues of concern. And that's a very important thing, because it enables new audiences to come under this broad umbrella or broad tent. Not everybody is there. Interesting to see that there are very few Palestinian citizens of Israel that are taking part in this protest. They feel a bit difficult to relate to the symbolism, to the language, to the messaging of this protest. For them, democracy has already been shattered or challenged decades ago. They do not see it as something that directly attaches to them. So there are different audiences that are not there, but the amount of people that are going to the streets, people who were never active politically before, people from the business community, people from security backgrounds, are willing not only to go to the street week after week, but also take action. And whether reservists that say we will not go to serve a dictatorship, or business people that are saying we will not do our business in Israel anymore and we'll take the money out of the high-tech sector, these are things that are dramatic potential game changer against which the government could not stand, at least until now. and really create a different equation. So that's, I think, the important issue. When there were counter-demonstrations beginning from the far right a few weeks ago with the inspiration of Netanyahu and extremist ministers like Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, you began to see some violence on the streets from those right-wing protesters. And that's very worrying because from a festival of democracy, there is a chance that whatever is happening in the streets could spill over to some right-wing violence against pro-democracy protesters. And that's something we're very concerned about.
Indeed. Well, that leads me to turn to my colleague, Mohammed El-Shenawy, to pick it up from here. Mohammed.
Despite masses of Israeli Jews filling city streets and blocking highways, police repression was negligible compared to the size of the protests. Yet when Palestinian worshippers stayed the night in Jerusalem Al-Aqsa Mosque to worship for Ramadan, police beat them with lethal weapons. Does that show equal treatment of citizens in a democracy?
It does show the difficulties in Israeli democracy. I think even those who are going to the street demonstrating for Israeli democracy, very few of them really say that the current situation of Israeli democracy is the one that we want to maintain. There's so much to improve. And of course, the Palestinian issue and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the occupation of the Palestinians are definitely issues that have eroded Israeli democracy over the years and should be high-level priorities to fix. The proximity of what is happening on the democracy front and what is happening within the Israeli-Palestinian context, especially during Ramadan, shows the interconnection between the two. Quite a number of people in Israel want to differentiate, say, well, democracy is one thing, conflict with the Palestinians is another, they are unrelated. But in practice, you see how they feed each other, whether it's settler violence, whether it's provocation that are being led by those extremist ministers that we mentioned, whether it's the role of the Supreme Court and its ability to safeguard some of the rights of minorities and other people around us. So I think there is a connection, and definitely the way the police handles different situations is evident. You know, that's considered a security threat. That's considered a domestic democratic issue, and the way it's being handled is different. Luckily enough, I think there was some wise decision made during the last few days about police action around in Al-Aqsa Mosque that prevented the escalation between Israelis and Palestinians to go further, and there were decisions not to do that anymore and to stop from labeling non-Muslims to go on the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the final days of Ramadan. And I think that may lead to some containment of this tension. Hopefully that will last.
Israel defines itself as a Jewish state. So no minority group is more vulnerable than non-Jewish Palestinian citizens. Yet, as you said, Palestinian citizens of Israel, who comprise about 20% of its population, have been virtually absent from the massive protests that have sought to protect Israel's court and save its democracy. What does that mean for the Palestinian perception of the role of the High Court?
And the definition of Israel is both Jewish and democratic. That's something that for people like me and others who are on the streets is very important to emphasize. So we are talking about a Jewish and democratic state. Of course, it's difficult inherently to bring those things to the same level, but it's an important message to convey. As I mentioned before, we do see the absence of Arab citizens or Palestinian citizens of Israel from most of the protests. Not totally. In some of the demonstrations, there are Arab speakers speaking on the stage. And in some of the Arab towns, there were initiatives to try and spark similar protests, even if smaller in number, over the last few weeks. But generally speaking, it's mostly a Jewish movement at the moment. And it relates to how, as you mentioned, how the High Court, the Supreme Court, the situation of democracy are being perceived by the Arab minority in Israel. They do not see themselves as having equal rights. They see this situation last for a long time. They are engaged in their battle for their equality. And they see that as a bit of detached from what the majority of protesters are doing on the street now. Plus, some of them question whether they will be welcome in such settings or not because of this interest to differentiate between the Palestinian issue and the democratic issue. I think it will be good to see more and more Arab participation. I think we need to see a combination between the different struggles for social change, social justice and democracy together in the Israeli society. And like the last government that we had, led by Bennett and Lapid, which was very diverse in terms of ideology, managed to have partners from the Arab society. I think the more connection there will be between those in Israel, in the Jewish community, that support democracy and liberalism with our Arab colleagues, friends, neighbors, I think the better it will be for our country.
But recent Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa Mosque have exacerbated negative portrayal of Israel, as has the annual flow of Jewish holiday visitors to the Temple Mount Al-Haram Sharif. Many commentators have questioned the conduct of the raids, including several U.S. legislations. How do you see the impact of the far-right coalition actions on Israeli image?
So the composition of the government is damaging foreign relations. And I think it goes much before Ramadan. One of the first things that happened when the government was established was Itamar Ben-Gvir going on Al-Aqsa. That was before Ramadan. It was done in a low-key manner, in a manner that prevented wide-range escalation. But it did spark a series of condemnations and warnings from our Arab neighbors, Arab countries around us. Some of them have peace agreement with Israel. Some have normalization agreements. Some are aspiring, at least Israelis are aspiring to have normalization with them. But over the last few months, there are more and more signals from Arab countries that what this government is doing damages the level of cooperation that exists between Israel and the Arab world. This is a field in which over the last 2-3 years, there was significant progress made. There were new openings in Israel-Arab relationship, not tied to the Palestinian issue, unfortunately, but there were progress made with many Arab countries. And this is currently challenged. You know, the Negev Forum, that forum that brings together Israel and Egypt and the UAE and Bahrain and Morocco with U.S. involvement as well, did not convene as planned in March in Morocco. It was postponed, maybe after Ramadan, maybe later. So the Arab world is signaling its discontent. And what's happening in Al-Aqsa is definitely reinforcing that. Although there are also efforts done by the U.S., the Palestinian Authority, Israel, Jordan, and Egypt to de-escalate, to prevent a flare-up. There were summits convened just recently in Aqaba, in Sharm el-Sheikh, in an attempt to find a way to cross Ramadan relatively without a flare-up. And I think the change of policy by the Israeli police regarding Al-Aqsa over the last few days is an indication of this intention, at least by Israel, to prevent a total flare-up. We have a week left for Ramadan, and I hope that situation will not change to the worse.
Well, thank you very much.
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. You are listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Nimrod Goren. He's Senior Fellow for Israeli Affairs at the Middle East Institute, and that's a think tank based in Washington. Nimrod joins us via Zoom from Jerusalem. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shanawi. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. And in anticipation of Eid, I would like to wish a hearty Eid Mubarak to all our Muslim listeners. Happy Easter to our Orthodox Christian followers and to our Jewish listeners. Chag Sameach. If you want to comment on this or other programs, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We're back to our terrific guest, Nimrod Goren. He's Senior Fellow for Israeli Affairs, and he's based in Jerusalem for the Middle East Institute. And Nimrod, I wanted to ask you, to what extent do you think that the protests on the streets, and despite the lack of Arab-Israeli participation, could this be a catalyst for a greater movement toward resolving the so-called Palestinian issue? I mean, to what extent do you think those Israeli Jews who are on the street protesting these judicial changes would then see the broader picture? What are your thoughts regarding that? Because we know that this particular right-wing government is set on expanding settlements, which is antithetical to a two-state solution.
I think for many Israelis, there is a difference between the two issues, and they prioritize the democratic issue now over the Palestinian issue. The sense in Israel is there cannot be much progress made towards Israeli-Palestinian peacemaking within the current conditions, both in Israel and the Palestinian Authority, including the divide between Fatah and Hamas, the West Bank and Gaza, and of course, the nature of Israeli politics. It doesn't mean that there are not people on the ground engaging people-to-people activities and civil society cooperation across the border between Israelis and Palestinians, but overall, the perception is the time is not tried for progress towards the two-state solution. And I think the international community echoes that, and you see quite limited activism towards a peace deal by the major international actors. They are engaged in efforts to prevent escalation, to advance ceasefires whenever needed. But in terms of actual diplomacy for peace, there is limited engagement, even if the Middle East Quartet, which is the international body, including the US, the EU, the UN, and Russia, that's supposed to advance peace, is not really convening. So there's need to establish maybe new mechanism for that. So most Israelis are within that scope, that peace with the Palestinians may be something we want, maybe something we need. The plurality still support, I think, the two-state solution in principle, but it seems something that is not feasible at the moment, while at the same time, there is something very, very urgent that needs to be fought against. It is the judicial overhaul. Sure. Therefore, all the efforts are currently going there.
Okay, we shall see. So let me ask you then, what is next for the judicial overhaul as we experience the end of Passover, Eid is coming up, holidays are coming to an end. What is the timetable and what do you think this government will do faced with massive protests, faced with opposition by the United States, its largest ally?
So the Knesset is in recess until the end of April. So we have two more weeks in which there will not be parliamentary moves on this issue. There will still be attempts for dialogue at the president's house. But once the Knesset session resumes, first, it's not only the judicial overhaul. There's a mass number of all kind of legislation attempts that this government wants to advance on other issues that are no less dangerous, some of them, to our democratic system. So the protest movement, I think, will keep on pushing against all those things that are advanced while keeping an eye on the very unique situation in which the legislation on the judicial overhaul can really be passed within a 24-hour move, because it already passed almost the entire process of legislation. The final phase could be done very quickly, and therefore the coalition has an upper hand now because it could pass that almost whenever it wants. So they need to mobilize the public to show to the government that the pro-democracy protest movement did not forget its fight during this month of, let's say, recess from the Knesset, and people are still willing to put all the pressure that they were willing to put a month or two ago. That's a message. The message is coming from the international community. Is important as well. Having President Biden and our allies in Europe convey the same messages of the importance of Israeli democracy, of safeguarding it, of the democratic nature of Israel being a central pillar for the special relation with the US. Those messages carry weight in Israel. They give legitimacy, they give backing to those protesting, and they can help efforts as well. So I think the next phase is looking into the Knesset session that goes from, let's say, end of April, early May, till the summer month. That will be the sensitive period. If the government wants to appoint the next Supreme Court judges, they will have to pass legislation within the next coming month. And the goal of others will be to prevent that, and to prevent that in a way that is through the public pressure, through the current legal mechanism that can override illegal legislation attempts. And that, I think, will be the battle that we face in the coming month.
Nimrod, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but can you make a prediction? I mean, this is a major showdown. As you said, this goes to the heart of Israel's identity as a Jewish and democratic state, notwithstanding the many other problems with the so-called occupation and et cetera, the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Can you predict how this may turn out?
Very difficult to predict. I think it was difficult to predict where we are at currently 2 or 3 months ago. But it seems like the government will make the push to pass this legislation. It's within its core interest and within Netanyahu's personal motivation to do so. It could do so at a timing which it will think it is favorable for it. But once that happens, if it happens, the Supreme Court will enter the picture and have to decide whether that's legal or not. And that could be a constitutional crisis like one we never had. If the court says one thing, the government says another thing, and is not willing to abide by the court decision, that's a very dangerous situation that Israel will be in.
Mohammed.
Biden and his administration have been stepping up their criticism of Netanyahu's government, not only over the judicial proposals, but also on the issues of expansion of Israeli settlement. The Biden administration has summoned Mike Herzog, Israel's ambassador to the U.S., to the State Department, to relay concerns over Israeli passage of a law that would allow the resettlement of areas of the northern West Bank. Do you expect a widening gap between the U.S. and Israel?
I think so. I think the Israeli government is continuing the way it will. I think the criticism from the U.S. will continue, and not clear how much that will be coupled with concrete action. We know that political conditions in the U.S. We see the administration not prioritizing the Middle Eastern issues or Israeli-Palestinian issue until now. So there may be a gap between the declarations and the actions. But I think, especially on the democratic issue, that's a space where the administration is willing to step up its criticism, maybe going beyond the words of concern into action steps that reflect a different nature of relations between Israel and the U.S., and that's something that for Israelis is a big failure of their prime minister. So if the average Israeli sees the special relations between Israel and its strongest ally diminishing, that leads more and more Israelis, like the poll you mentioned from The Economist, like recent public opinion polls published in the Israeli media, to go away from Likud, from Netanyahu, and seek other leaders, other parties, more moderate in nature, who can first and foremost advance our national interests, not their own personal motivations and the expense of our foreign policy and security.
Nimrod Goren, we talked about the heightened Israeli-Palestinian tensions following Israeli police raids in Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. And of course, this was followed by cross-border strikes in Gaza and Lebanon. To what extent are you concerned that these tensions are threatening to spiral into a wider conflict, you know, with neighbors, Lebanon? And then we also have the Saudis and the Iranians potentially coming together or trying to find consensus with the Chinese brokering of the deal. That also probably dissatisfies or disappoints Bibi Netanyahu because he wants Iran to be continually isolated. How do you see this international context?
There is a worrying trend. And of course, what happened during Ramadan was something that Israelis were concerned. The main concern was that something serious will escalate during this month. Until now, there were escalations that somehow contained. Whenever Ramadan passes, I think there will be an attempt to maybe ease a bit of the thing. Some of the practical cooperation between Israel and its neighbors is continuing despite the tensions. And the goal is for this to continue. But I think the Israelis' enemies outside see what's happening domestically and see Israel at a point of weakness and are willing to challenge Israel more than they were willing to do so before.
Nimrod Goren, so as we close, you did mention that we don't really know exactly what's going to happen, but the government is likely to try to continue to push this overhaul. So we'll see more tensions ahead. But once again, on the international front, as you said, this particular showdown over the judicial overhaul and other policies by the right-wing government, it is all jeopardizing the U.S.-Israeli relationship and, of course, putting in jeopardy potentially the Abraham Accords. So from this larger perspective, how do you think the government will be navigating this, particularly as we were just talking about the regional dynamic, which is now not really going in Israel's favor with Saudi Arabia, you know, making a rapprochement with Iran? How do you see all of this going forward?
The government currently is willing to pay a price on the international front in order to advance its domestic agenda. That's dangerous. The government does try to prevent an escalation in the region, a big one. It tries to do whatever it can to contain. But again, the implications of all the policies, all the provocations, all the statements are ones that really reshape in a negative way Israel's relation within the Middle East, with our allies in Europe, with the U.S. So our foreign relations is taking a negative turn for the sake of a judicial overhaul that has lots of negative implications domestically. So I think this combination of understanding both the domestic crisis, but also the international ones, and having the backing of our friends abroad to the pro-democracy movement in Israel is something meaningful that I hope will continue and will be more significant than it was until now.
And do you think, Nimrod Goren, that the government could fall over these crises?
Currently, the government has quite a convenient majority in the Knesset of 64 members of Knesset. The goal of the pro-democracy movement is to create such a pressure on the government to make those who are more responsible, more moderate within the coalition, and there are some of those within Likud, to make them understand that this thing has such a big price for Israel that they do not want to be part of, that it goes against their perspective. Yoav Gallant, as Minister of Defense, was only signaling such messaging. Yuli Edelstein, also from Likud, was conveying similar messaging. So if economic prices, security prices, democratic prices, diplomatic prices will all mount up, the hope is that there will be enough people from within the government that will put a stop sign. So it may not topple the government, but it may change the course of those legislation that Netanyahu wants to advance.
And I'll end with a quote, actually, from The Economist magazine saying that with regard to Prime Minister Netanyahu, his time has passed. Quote, to stop Bibi from breaking Israel, moderates must resist his power grab and press for a government that puts the Middle East's only successful liberal democracy on a less dangerous path. Close quote. Well, Nimrod Goren, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time and critical insights about the situation in Israel and its implications for the region and the world.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Nimrod Goren is Senior Fellow for Israeli Affairs at the Middle East Institute. He is based in Jerusalem. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. And joining me on the program was VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shanawi. I'm Carol Castiel. Please join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.